I do too. I was never a huge fan of this.
Good morning. This is Frank Riccio, who I am the host, and today's Talking About the Law. And with me is co-host Bob Flynn. And we're talking to Worcester attorney, trial lawyer, Ralph Sprogna, about medical malpractice. And this is really medical malpractice 101. These are the basic rules that all of us have to go through in terms of bringing these types of cases. Ralph, you've decided now to take the case, and you're ready. You've got everything lined up. There's a new health law or a new malpractice law that was just passed in November 4th, or went into effect on November 4th of 2012. Can you tell me what steps or hurdles you have to deal with now in terms of bringing this claim?
What the new law requires is that before the claim is brought, you must send a notice letter to the care provider, and then once that is received by the medical care provider, there is a 6-month so-called hands-off period where the provider is given the opportunity to review the merits of the claim and to make an offer of settlement, thereby eliminating the expense and the delay associated with litigation. It also gives the medical care provider a chance to apologize to the patient without any adverse ramifications that may result from the apology.
How has that changed the old way? When I say old way, I'm only talking several months ago. Of handling medical malpractice cases, what changes?
Well, it's just another step in the process, because even after you comply with having sent the notice letter informing the medical care provider that you're going to bring a claim against them in which you're alleging substandard medical care, you still have to thereafter. If the claim is not resolved in that 6-month period, you still have to then file your claim as you would have before this new legislation, and then again go before the medical malpractice tribunal. So what's changed is we send our materials out to the expert witnesses and get an opinion as to whether or not the care is substandard before we send the notice letters out, because the notice letters require that you inform the medical care provider with some particularity as to what the deficient or substandard medical care is that you're alleging, to give them an opportunity to investigate as to whether or not your allegations are true.
You know, if I could, I'm just curious, Ralph. That letter goes out, but it's based on the information probably that you have at the time. But discovery, which takes place over the course of the 3 years before a trial occurs, usually does. That's why we do discovery, reveal more information, maybe an error that was entirely different than was originally anticipated. Is that new error, that new evidence, something that can come into the case?
Well, the discovery that you're speaking about, maybe just a brief little lesson here for our listeners, is that once the case is filed, you then submit written questions, which we call interrogatories, to the defendants to have them answer. And also, as part of that, we ask for documents that may not have been included in the medical records, which we've already obtained. And then lastly, we take depositions of the healthcare providers. And that is a process whereby, in a lawyer's office with a court stenographer present, we ask questions about the care and treatment of the patient, questions about the physician or healthcare provider's background, education, experience, to get additional information that is not included within the four corners of the medical record. We sometimes will conduct depositions before the medical malpractice tribunal is convened. Although by statute you're not allowed to do that as a matter of course, but because the tribunals have been delayed so much from what was originally the schedule set out by the legislature, that most defense attorneys will now allow you to conduct that discovery even though the tribunal has not been convened yet. So with regard to the new law that requires this notice, if you will, again, during that six-month period, it's supposed to be a hands-off period where neither side is doing discovery, neither side is bearing the expense of the discovery, because these depositions can be quite expensive. So you're pretty much relying for your notice letter on what is in the four corners of the medical record and what your expert witness has been able to glean from that and what his opinions are in that regard.
It seems sure. like the intent of this new health law is to facilitate settlement. However, say there's no offer of settlement within that six-month period, then what happens?
If there's no settlement within that six-month period, there may well be an offer, but the offer would not be something that the plaintiff is willing to accept to end the case. Then we're back to square one as to where we were before the legislation, the most recent legislation, which means file suit, have your tribunal, then proceed to discovery, and if during that prolonged process there is not an offer accepted by the patient, then ultimately you go to trial.
Frank, what I was really wondering is on the notice, on that six-month notice, is a plaintiff actually bound to the four corners of whatever the notice says if, in fact, there's more to the case than was readily discoverable, you know, before the letter was drafted?
I would hope not. Ralph, would you, you know,
That's a good question.
Yep.
What we frequently find is as we conduct our discovery, we may find that there are other providers who were also negligent, or we may find the same provider to be negligent in additional respects other than what we originally knew and alleged in the complaint. Massachusetts is very liberal in terms of allowing us, once we discover new information that wasn't available to us prior to the discovery, allowing us to go in and amend the complaint to include other allegations of negligence that we didn't know prior thereto. So there is a liberal process of filing amendments with the court so that we can encompass all that we then know in terms of each aspect of negligence. Now, there's another aspect to this, that when the experts give their opinions, you have to be very careful in terms of making sure that you disclose the full opinions and the basis for each opinion of your expert to defense counsel, because you can find yourself at trial wanting your expert to testify as to a certain aspect of the care that you deem negligent, and unless you've let the other side know about that beforehand, some judges will prevent you because it's somewhat of a surprise to them and they've not been able to prepare for it because you haven't disclosed that to them in your written expert opinions.
Yeah.
Here, you know, these are all examples of kind of the checks and balances that go into these types of cases. Now, what about the apology aspect of the law? Do you foresee any benefits to the consumer having that provision in the law?
No. The only benefits that I see flowing from that are to the medical care providers, because there have been studies that have shown that when physicians apologize for a mistake, that the patient is far less likely to bring a claim against the physician once the apology has been made. So if you look at this process as being something that is ultimately the social good of it, to try to improve the system, to deliver better medical care to patients, then by apologizing and not holding the physician accountable for their mistakes, to me, it's going to be less of an incentive for them to correct the mistakes that they've made and to prevent these similar kinds of occurrences happening to patients further down the road. So from that aspect, the apology aspect of the new legislation, I think that that's very detrimental to patients and conversely very favorable to the physicians.
Now, once the case is into suit, I know you mentioned the fact that there's a tribunal system, and you also touched upon discovery. And discovery is can be very, very extensive, and you talked about depositions. What happens when the case is in suit? What is the usual progression, if you will, of a case in suit, typically?
Typically, the first aspect of discovery that is conducted is interrogatories, which are written questions filed by each side to the other, asking for information under oath that is not contained within the medical records. So it's a way of gathering other pertinent, relevant information with respect to the claim that you cannot derive from the medical records. Once that is digested, once the interrogatory answers have been received by either side, the defense attorneys will, in every case, take the deposition of the plaintiff, of the plaintiff's family members, and perhaps the plaintiff's employers, if there's a claim for lost wages.
When we come back, and I'm going to have you hold that thought, we're going to talk about, and we'll continue this theme of checks and balances, what happens next at trial, and what is alternative dispute resolution?